Welcome to Deconstructed. I'm TJ O'Hara, the Principal Political Analyst for IVN. Our goal on Deconstructed is to break down important political issues with outstanding guests, so you can develop your own more informed opinion. My guest today is Lulu Freisdad, an Emmy Award-winning journalist who's produced election coverage for MSNBC and reported on election integrity issues since 2008, the same year in which she received the Best Documentary Award for Hollerback, Not Voting in an American Town. And when it comes to journalistic integrity, Ms. Freisdad is a two-time recipient of the Edward R. Murrow Award. Lulu, it's a pleasure to welcome you to Deconstructed.
Oh, thank you so much for having me here, TJ.
Lulu, you just did another interesting investigative report on DEF CON. For audience members who may not be aware of what DEF CON is, can you explain what that convention's about and what your reporting highlighted?
DEF CON is one of the largest hacking conventions in the world, actually, and this was their 26th anniversary convention. For the second year, they gathered electronic voting equipment from all over the country and allowed security experts and hackers to have free access to those machines to see if, in fact, the security of the voting equipment could withstand people with hacking skills. And for the second year in a row, it was clear that the machines were not secure, that there were massive vulnerabilities across the board. And all of these machines that were there this year are, in fact, in use in our elections here in the U.S. So it was extremely concerning. And in particular, this year I focused on an optical scan machine that is in use in 24 states. It is possibly the most widely used optical scan machine in the country. And the security experts at DEF CON were able to hack it so easily that it was actually frightening. Even somebody like me, who is pretty jaded, you know, and I've sort of seen this stuff play out and I've seen how vulnerable these machines are, I was stunned at how easy it was to install a program that could change the results of elections. It could literally move votes, say, from one candidate to another or change the results in these widely used optical scan machines. And that video is available, was produced by Now This. And I think, TJ, you're going to have a link up to that.
That's correct. We'll have that on our website for you.
Great. Yeah, I really encourage people to watch that and take a look. There's two different ways to access the machine that are demonstrated in the piece. One is so simple. The machine is programmed with what's called a zip disk. Do you remember zip disk?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, they were sort of what came when we were all using floppy disks. Those who remember floppy disks, when sort of like computers were sort of first coming out and you wanted to store your data, sort of like an early version of a USB drive. And then you couldn't put that much in a floppy disk, so they made these kind of bigger floppy disks called zip disks. So that's how old these machines are, but they're still in very common usage, as I said, in 24 states. And the machine boots up with a zip disk. And the problem is that you can just put that zip disk in the machine, and if you have malware on your zip disk, the machine has no security protocol to question, well, what is the zip disk that someone just inserted in me? Is this actually the correct program? Is this from someone I can trust? There's no testing. There's no security. If you put a zip disk in that machine and it's a different operating system than the one the machine is currently running, it just goes, oh, this must be an update. I'll take that. And then it just takes whatever program is on that zip disk. And there are literally tens of thousands of people who might have access to this machine to be able to just walk by, put a zip disk in it for 1 minute and move on. And that would then change the way the machine counts our vote. So this is really, really concerning.
I know it's demonstrated on the video, which I highly encourage everybody to go see. But how long did it take them to gain access to these machines that, as you say, 10,000 people have access at any point in time? How long did it actually take them to, in effect, download a new operating system?
The piece demonstrates two different ways it can be done. So that way was so simple that the hackers didn't even really demonstrate it. I had an interview where someone, one of the security experts I interviewed, told me about that hack. The hackers actually wanted something more challenging. And so what they did, they implemented a different hack on the back of the machine. They took off the back of the machine, hooked up a port there with their computer, and then instituted a program that way. The hacker that I interviewed said that it would take him probably 1 minute of access to the machine to be able to implement that hack. And as we know, just putting a disk in a machine is actually probably even faster. 30 seconds, you put the disk in the machine, and then maybe you wait 3 minutes for the program to load and walk on. So these are programs that take very, very small amounts of time to implement. And then that program could be in effect for years. decades, as these machines are in use for years and years and years, and that program could just stay in there. You could be controlling from your computer and setting up the program to count however you want.
So in other words, in less than a minute with either hack, to which tens of thousands of people have access, they can gain full root access with no security code whatsoever. So they have complete control of that system. Is that correct?
That's my understanding of what these hackers explained to me.
Lulu, one of the things that caught my attention on the video is that a hacker was asked, how did you gain access to the operating system? Do you remember that element of the video?
They actually downloaded this operating system from a Russian server.
Exactly. That shows how secure we are in our political system.
It's really, really concerning.
In addition to the potential for manipulation, these optical scanners that you've referenced, the ES&S M650 central scanners, and they're also subject to errors, aren't they?
So optical scan machines can count incorrectly for a number of reasons, right? It could be a deliberate manipulation. It could also be an error. It's really hard to know sometimes why the machine might be counting incorrectly. And because we're not doing audits that frequently, we don't have that many opportunities to check whether or not they're being counted accurately. But if you remember, I did a previous investigation of the optical scan machines in Racine County, Wisconsin. And because of that investigation, they did have an audit there, a citizens audit. And the machines there, they found, had a 2.5% error rate. Now, these were the machines that were actually in use in 2016 when Trump won Wisconsin. Now, keep that number in mind. It was a 2.5% error rate, but Trump won Wisconsin by less than 1%. So that error rate is a very significant error rate. And if in fact, now those machines were only in use in some counties, but we don't know what the error rate is in the other machines because they haven't really been tested. So if in fact you have those type of error rates, these are significant amounts that could be changing the outcomes of elections. And that's why it's just so important that we really start meaningfully auditing our elections.
Well, Lulu, we're going to take a quick break and talk more about election integrity issues when we come back. My guest today is Emmy Award-winning election integrity journalist Lulu Freistadt. Lulu, we were talking about election integrity relative to the optical scanners. Can you get into that subject a little more deeply relative to how states are using those optical scanners and some of the reasons that we should be concerned, including calibration and manipulation?
The optical scan or digital scan machines, there's a couple different kinds, are definitely preferable to, say, a touchscreen machine. Well, I've talked in the past, in my past investigations about touchscreen machines. Those machines that basically have no paper trail whatsoever are even more problematic. We need to be eliminating them completely. And there are still, I believe, 5 states where they are completely dependent on touchscreen machines that have no paper trail. And if, in fact, those machines are programmed or have errors, there's literally just no way to find out. You would have no way of knowing that the voters intended a different candidate to win or a referendum to have a different outcome. So we need to be moving to different alternatives than the touchscreen machines. And really, the main machine that states are turning to are these optical or digital scanners. So it's an improvement, but we have to really be aware of the pitfalls of these machines. If we're not going to just sit down and count all our ballots by hand, which in general states are not set up to do, then we have to really be aware of the problems with the machines that we're using. So with the optical scan or the digital scan machines, the problems are that they can quite easily be hacked, as my latest investigative piece demonstrates, and they do have errors. So if we're going to use these machines, the great thing about them is that they have usually a hand-marked paper ballot to begin with. In order to use the optical scan or digital scan machine, people are actually marking their vote on a piece of paper, and that paper is fed into the machine. The only exception is if you have disabled voters who are sometimes using devices to help them. But most of the time, you're able to have a hand-marked paper ballot. And so that hand-marked paper ballot is incredibly important because that has the voter's intent. You can go back and look at that ballot, and there is really, unless it's filled out incorrectly with stray marks or something, there is a clear line to the voter's intent. And that's what we want to be looking at. We want to be going back to the paper ballots and hand counting them in as many instances as we can. It's not always practical to 100% hand count them, but we want to be looking at enough of those paper ballots that we can be really confident that we are certifying the correct outcome.
Lulu, are most states auditing their optical scan results or just accepting them?
they're not auditing. In very, very few cases are states actually doing the types of audits that would find any sort of election fraud or errors in the machines. One of the things about an audit is you have to really make sure what you're auditing, right? The question of the audit has to really be the right question. So for example, some of these audits will just run a stack of ballots through a machine to see, does the machine count this stack of ballots correctly? That's not the question that you want to answer. The question you want to answer is, did this machine count these ballots correctly on this day of the election? Because machines can be programmed to count differently on different days. They can be programmed to count differently during a test than they do during an actual election. You saw that with the Volkswagen scandal where those cars were programmed to pass the test, but in fact, they were leaking all kinds of emissions. So an audit needs to be set up to ask the right question. And the question is, did the machine count these votes correctly on that day? Your question to me was, are states doing these audits the right types of audits? And the answer is no. For the most part, they are not. And I'll give you an example of that. In California, they audit 1% of the ballots. They have a mandatory 1% hand count requirement in place by law. The problem is, first off, 1% is not sufficient to catch fraud or errors in all cases. And secondly, there is a loophole in that law that was just passed that allows the states, the counties, not to count any of the provisional ballots or any of the late returning absentee mail ballots. And you might think, oh, that's not so many ballots. But in California, most people are voting by mail now. And those mail ballots that come in after Election Day is a huge percentage of the vote. So now you're only auditing 1% and you're not auditing all of these absentee ballots that come in after Election Day. So let me ask you something, TJ. So if you have an audit scheduled with the IRS and you know that from January to June, they're going to audit all of your receipts, and you know that from July to December, they don't audit anything. Let me ask you, when are you going to make the illegal changes in your part? Right?
I refuse to answer on the grounds of May 10 to increment. No, I mean... But your point is well taken, and that's exactly what happens. It's the same thing in some states where the audits aren't being chosen randomly. They're being chosen by the Secretary of State and so forth. So the audits themselves can be directed, correct?
Right. So in Colorado, they've implemented risk limiting audits, and I applaud them. This is really a step in the right direction. Risk limiting audits are a very robust type of audit that was designed to a large extent by Philip Stark, a statistician from the University of California, Berkeley. And it is a method to take all of the ballots in play and randomly sample a certain number of the ballots. It depends on how tight the race is, how many ballots there are. Randomly sample enough ballots to have a high level of confidence that the race has been counted correctly. And in order to do that, they have to have this very complicated procedure, actually. They have to have the ballots organized very carefully so that they can look at how the machine counted the ballot. And then they go and look at that actual paper ballot and see, did the machine count it correctly? If yes, then if it's yes in enough cases, then you're confident. If for some reason it looks like the machine is not counting the ballots correctly, then you expand the audit. You look at more paper ballots. You look at more until perhaps you might do a full recount if it's determined that the machine was not counting correctly. So this is a risk-limiting audit. Now, here's the thing. In Colorado, they've started these risk-limiting audits. As I said, I applaud them. It's great. But the way the races are chosen is by the Secretary of State. So they're not doing risk-limiting audits on all of the races in all of the elections. They're doing one statewide race and one countywide race. And those races are chosen by the Secretary of the State of Colorado, who is a partisan elected official. So if that individual decided to protect a particular race, a race thought perhaps they didn't want that race audited, maybe that race was rigged or there was a problem with that race, they can just ignore that race and pick a different race. So clearly that is not giving us the comprehensive confidence that we want that all of the races are being audited and that all of the results are correct. So when these states are implementing risk-limiting audits, I really encourage them to make sure that it is a comprehensive, random audit, and that I really encourage people to get involved. I know it's complicated. I know it seems like it's really down in the weeds, but get in there, talk to your election officials, develop a relationship with your board of elections, volunteer to be a poll worker, find out how this process works, get informed about how your elections work in your county, and then watch, observe, develop a positive relationship if possible, and then see what you can do to improve the security and the accuracy of your elections. Because elections are local. That's really the thing about it. In the U.S., elections are local. And what that means is that someone like me, who's concerned about this, will never have the ability to go and observe and try to give advice about all of the elections in the country. You, as an individual, need to really take this on and say, this is part of my job as a citizen. Not only do I vote, I pay attention to how my vote is counted and whether or not I have confidence that the results are accurate. And if I don't have that confidence, I'm going to get in there and find out what needs to be done to give me confidence that the results are accurate.
Lulu, we're going to take a quick break and talk more about election integrity issues when we come back. My guest today is the two-time Edward R. Murrow Award-winning journalist, Lulu Freistadt. Lulu, we were talking about election integrity issues and specifically talking about audits. I don't think we've actually wrapped up that subject yet, so would you like to put the finishing touches on that?
Yeah, there were a couple other points I wanted to make. We talked about risk-limiting audits and what's good about them, what are some of the pitfalls. There's another type of audit that is really very straightforward, and especially in smaller counties. If your county has, say, less than 50,000 voters on average, this is a great type of audit to turn to. It's called a modified 100% hand count audit. This has been done in Columbia County, New York, since 2010. And they have a very efficient model now. They can do this rapidly. And basically what they do, they have very secure chain of custody. So they take the ballots and make sure that they're carefully watched after election night. And then on the next day and for the following week, they bring them out. And with workers from across the county, they count them by hand. And usually they'll count close to 100% of those ballots. And I said they have an efficient process to do it. And then they compare those hand count results to the machine count results and make sure that they are the same. And if there are any problems, they'll take that hand count result usually. So this is something people will say, like, you can't hand count all these ballots. The fact is that you can, and the fact is that it's being done. And so that really should be considered as an option when you're going to your county and you're trying to say, how can we make sure that the vote count is secure? You don't need any extra legislation. Most of the time, the county election officials have the authority to conduct a hand count audit if they want to. And it's something that could even be implemented for the 2018 midterms. And I encourage everyone to go to their county election officials and say, can we do a hand count audit? I'm concerned about this election. There's so much going on with the potential for fraud and manipulation. Even if you did a hand count of one randomly selected race on the ballot, that would give tremendous amount of confidence to all of the races on the ballot. And it would act as a great deterrent, because if it's known that there's going to be a hand count audit of even one randomly drawn race, it is much, much more risky for someone to interfere with the results of the election. And I encourage you to get in there and talk to your officials and try to do that. And I want to quickly say there's one other type of protection that you can work on, and that is to do a public records request for the digital ballot images. And this is something that's being done all over the country. In fact, lawsuits have been filed to get a hold of these images. In general, depending on the public records laws in your state, ballots are covered by public records laws. And so you may be able to do a public records request for the digital ballot images that these optical scan and digital scan machines create. And then if you have those digital ballot images, your local group or a candidate can count the results of the election yourself. You can go through the digital, it'll be an image of each ballot, and do a citizen's count the way they did in Wisconsin, and double check if the results match the results that were certified. And that's another great way to try to make sure that we're getting accurate results.
Now, Lulu, if we're doing hand counts, that suggests that there also has to be a secure chain of custody relative to the ballots. And I know you've been involved with Tim Canova's lawsuit down in Florida. Can you touch upon the issue of how well or how poorly ballots are currently being secured, and also what we should be doing?
Yeah, there's a wide spectrum, and we really need some very strong chain of custody laws in place. In the race you mentioned in Broward County, we did not have confidence in the chain of custody at all. The chain of custody forms were not completely filled out, and the way that they were filled out, the ballots were all accepted by an individual who had known conflicts of interest there. The person who was accepting the ballots on the chain of custody forms had his picture taken and had his picture on the wall or on his desk or with Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Tim's opponent. So Tim had very, very grave concerns about the chain of custody there. In Columbia County, New York, they have a wonderful chain of custody protocol where as the ballots come out of the machine at the end of the night, they are under bipartisan supervision at all times. They are taken under supervision to the county headquarters. They are then locked in a room where it's called a double lock. There's no way to get into the room unless the commissioner from the Democratic Party and the Republican Party both put their keys in. So that's a very securely locked room. The ballots are left in that room under lock and then taken out under bipartisan supervision and counted immediately the next day in this hand count process. So that is good chain of custody. And that's what we want. An audit is meaningless unless the ballots have been supervised at all times. And I want to also, there's another type of audit that they're doing, the hand count audit there in Columbia County. In Wisconsin, they've developed this great audit technique where the ballot is projected with a document projector on the wall, and everyone in the room can see the ballot. And then you can flash these ballots, say like one per second as they go by, and literally everyone in the room can audit. They do it usually with clickers, and you have an official audit team, but any citizen observers who want to come and watch can verify the count themselves. That is just a terrific, transparent technique that's been developed that we should be implementing across the country. It's fantastic. It's easy. It's fast. It's cheap. These are the kind of systems that we want to be going to.
Audits can also be done by independent agencies, can't they?
Oh, why? Why are election officials auditing their own election results? It makes no sense whatsoever. The IRS does not let you go in and audit your own books and say, hey, yeah, everything looks great here. That's not an audit. It's just not done that way in any other industry. Banks don't audit themselves. Independent agencies conduct audits, and we need to be moving to independent agencies. And there are usually independent agencies in any given government that could be taking on this function. For example, in New York, we are working on legislation, and tentatively we've recommended that the comptroller's office be the one that would oversee these audits. They may need Board of Elections participation, but the audits need to be supervised and designed by an independent agency. And furthermore, why are our elections being conducted by partisan election officials, right? This is a larger question that we are not asking. We are really the only major democracy that does not have an independent agency that administer the elections. The fact that the Secretary of State, who oversees the elections in each state, is themselves either a Democrat or a Republican, usually, is a member of a political party and therefore obviously is a partisan official who has a preference about who wins the election, that's a complete conflict of interest. Other democracies, European democracies, other democracies have independent agencies that administer their elections, and we need to be moving to that.
Now, there's also a movement through the PAVE Act trying to push for the mandated use of paper ballots. Can you touch upon that very, very briefly?
The PAVE Act has been sponsored by Ron Wyden, a senator from Oregon. It mandates that all voters have the opportunity to hand mark a paper ballot and that those paper ballots be counted with risk-limiting audits. It's probably the best piece of legislation that has been presented so far. It's been co-sponsored by Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, and that is the piece of legislation that I encourage people to support right now.
And there's a new type of machine that's coming out that seems to be gaining popularity, a ballot marking device. Can you touch upon that very briefly?
Ballot marking devices are useful for the disabled community. If somebody doesn't have use of their hands, they need a ballot marking device, which is basically like a touchscreen machine that they can use to mark a ballot for them, and then it can print out a paper ballot for them. Able-bodied voters do not need a ballot marking device. And one thing, these devices are much more expensive than just hand marking a paper ballot and putting it into an optical scan machine or a digital scan machine. They cost like 3 to 4 times as much as just using an optical scan machine. They're basically like $5,000-$6,000 pencils. The one that's most popular right now is made by ES&S, the same company that made the machine that was so easily hacked. Called the Express Vote. It's really popular and counties are buying it because it's easy. We're used to going to the ATM and pushing some buttons and our money comes out. But ATMs have a totally different type of security than these machines. These machines have very, very poor security. So it's a touchscreen machine and then it prints out, sometimes it prints out a paper ballot that has supposedly marked your choices. Now, they've done studies, and the studies indicate that most voters don't check if the machine has actually printed out the correct choices. And furthermore, some of the machines don't even print out a paper ballot. They just automatically count your ballot. And then you're basically right back in a situation where you haven't created this independent paper audit trail where the voter marks the ballot themselves and we can go back and find who the voter absolutely wanted to vote for. The machine has created the ballot. The machine is counting the ballot. You have no way of knowing that the count is correct. And the other very, very risky thing about these machines is that they count the vote using barcodes. Barcodes can be hacked. You have the barcode, and that has supposedly the candidate that you want to vote for. And that barcode reader could be programmed to read the barcode differently so that it actually counts the vote for a different candidate than the one that you wanted to vote for. And the way you can think about this is, imagine you're in the grocery store and there are barcodes on a product. If the store has a sale and the sale is only good on these 2 days, then you'll get a discount price. Now imagine that's your vote. On one day, it reads your vote the way you want it to be read, and on the next day, it reads your vote for the opposite candidate. It's very, very problematic, and unfortunately, counties across the country are just swooping these machines up. So we really, really don't want to keep repeating these same mistakes.
Lulu, in the limited amount of time we have left, where can our listeners go to learn more about you, watch your investigative reports, and support your ongoing efforts?
Well, I really hope that you'll keep in touch with me. I love it that people are concerned about this and excited about finding solutions. Follow me on Twitter at Lulu Freistadt, LuluFreistadt. You can follow me on Facebook. You can check out my website, hollerbackfilm.com. That's HollerbackFilm.com. Hollerback is my word for democracy. When democracy works, it's because you holler back. You get involved. And if you're on my website at Hollerback Film, please do click donate. I am almost at the point of making my expenses back for this trip to DEF CON. It's always expensive to travel, and film equipment is expensive. So if you can, please do give what you can to support my work. Go to hollerbackfilm.com and click on donate. I really do need your help. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Lulu. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. It's good to know that people like you continue to work hard to assure the integrity of our elections. So thank you again for joining me on Deconstructed.
Such a pleasure, TJ.